Welcome. I'm Kevin Miller, and this podcast is called Self-Helpful, because not all self-help is helpful. I'm your curator, critic, and translator of the best and brightest minds in the self-help world today. My great friend, my doctor, and my co-host here on the Functional Friday episodes, Randy James, medical doctor and functional medicine expert. For the first years of knowing each other, I pestered him with, what are the core pillars of health? What are they? And he'd always push back with the answer that, well, it depends. What is the core for one person may not be for another. It's very personal to each person's makeup and pathology. So in this episode, I actually tried to hit him up again. I put him on the spot. And this time I actually succeeded. I posed the question of what aspect of health is number one. And I really expected some lively discourse. Instead, we actually came into an answer. At face value, it is, again, an unfair question, which is why I wanted to spar with Randy on it, as the entire point of functional medicine is how individualized and unique our personal health is. And there's no one-size-fits-all solution. So to ask what aspect of health is number one is not a fair question. But as we talked about the concept of if you can only pick one area of health, which is most important, we found ourselves coming to an actual agreement and a bit of a revelation for both of us. To be candid, we recorded this show about a year ago, and since then it has forever altered our outlook on our health and wellness and some specific routines. And I'm not going to keep you in suspense. I'll give you the answer. It is sleep, your recovery. But I really implore you to listen in and find out why we came to that. As if I had simply been told it's sleep without the grappling that went behind it, I don't think I would have accepted it to the level I have. The Self-Helpful Podcast was founded by the Zig Ziglar Corporation. If you're a coach or a consultant and want to add credibility and clients and impact to your business, go to Ziglar.com today. This podcast exists to help you find and understand the guidance and counsel that will help you elevate your personal experience of life and the way you show up for others. Following these sponsors who help make the show possible and provide great resources for your life, I bring you Dr. Randy James and really a profound discussion on why, if you had to safeguard just one aspect of your health, it would be sleep. And this should give you some freedom and conviction as it did us. I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico, and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon, really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky, where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
All right, in today's show, Dr. Randy James, I got a question for you. You ready?
Yeah.
You're not going to like it.
I am nervous.
You ready? Okay. Which aspect of, and I'm going to pretend like I'm a patient. Dr. James, which aspect of, I got all kinds of things on. Which aspect of health is most important? Come on. Give me your
okay,
best.
Okay. I'm thinking because.
It's not your question. I'm not trying to fish.
You didn't prepare me for that.
I know.
Okay. So what aspect of health is the most important?
Okay, let me frame it again. Okay. In the aspect of, now I have heard you do this with patients to some degree. I say, I mean, you got all this stuff going on, there's all these things, but the most acute thing is right here. But that's, again, individual to the patient. Say the most acute thing for you is to, you know, go fix your marriage relationship. The most thing for you is to quit eating gluten. The most thing, best thing for you is to exercise, you know, whatever. That's individual. But of course, you know, here we are talking to tens of thousands of people. Okay. And okay, what is it? And granted, I mean, I know you. It's not a, you don't like the question. It's not a fair question. So come out here and say, okay, but
speaking to 1,000 people, yeah, and saying, hey, the most important aspect of your health. Okay, I reserve the right to change my mind as we speak, but I would say brain health.
Really?
You are your brain.
It's not where I thought you'd go.
Well, I can change my mind. You can coach me to change my mind, Dr. Kevin.
Okay, well, let me ask this. If you look out, let's look at your patients. So over the years, however many thousands of patients or whatever, where is the most detrimental area that, like, you end up addressing?
Where are they kind of hurting themselves the most?
Yeah. Yeah, even like that, if I took the next 100 patients that go out,
right,
what's your primary prescription focal for them point to start addressing, like, hey,
gonna,
their...
Okay. Okay, then I would say gut. I would say the interface between your nutrition, your immune system, which is in your gut, and microbiome, and then everything kind of flowing out from there.
So that would be what I put that. So if we go back to our pillars of input, output, recovery, relationships, you just said that. I would tend to couch that into an input area.
Well, I would have guessed you would have said that, but what do you do out the other end of your gut?
Well, that's not fair. That's
a whole lot of output.
It's still but you're still talking a physiological in regards to what I put in my mouth that it doesn't like, or what I'm not putting in that I need.
Yeah. Like I would say nutrition, it doesn't mean just what you eat. And so the gastrointestinal system, and maybe we could even couch that under, it is gastro neuropsychoimmunology. How's that for an answer?
I have no idea what that is. So layman's terms?
Everything. You asked me what's the most important thing, and I would say everything. But no, the node, think of nodes. Like if you look down on a nighttime map of America and you see where the bright lights are.
Yeah.
Okay, you see big emptiness in the middle.
I love those because we're in a dark area.
We're in a dark area, right.
I'm very proud of
Denver is our closest light.
Yeah.
Right. So Denver, Chicago, and maybe Salt Lake if it has light. So that's right. We would not be considered a really populous node of electricity and telephone lines and all of that. It would be Chicago and LA and all those kind of places. Well, I would say the gastrointestinal system is one of these major intersectional nodes of human health because there is the gut-brain axis, meaning psycho.
Yeah,
there is the gut interconnection with the neuroendocrine system, and how people say, I have a gut intuition. People get nervous and they go barf, or they have to go to the bathroom, or you know, it's my turn up to bat, and I've got butterflies in my tummy, right? That's a neurological connection.
I'm a product of that. I mean, my own IBS, you know, and intestinal digestive issues, I want to focus 100% on my food. And yet that's not fair because I realize it's my anxiety, which I use that term. And man, I don't
it's
feel
your
like a
psycho-neuro-gastro connection. We would say you have a more sensitive node if you're a nervous stomach. And people say, I have a nervous stomach, right? Like all of these words come into play and you're like, oh yeah, we do say things like that. That, and to speak medically, it's not just what you eat, but how you eat and how you chew and who you eat with. And then it's not just, you know, poop is poop, but between eating and elimination, what is the absorption? What's the assimilation? What's the evacuation? What's the portability of these things across the transportation across cellular lines? I'm thinking of our map of the United States again, you know, the highway. If you look, those big famous 14 change interchange things in LA, cloverleaf times 10 kind of thing. Well, there again, you get a wrong thing there in LA, and that might impact you in Denver.
Yeah.
If you get it wrong in Wichita, Kansas, whatever. And but even as you're thinking about that, you're thinking about it with your brain. So I think that, okay. You know, the patient is going to perceive their world around them through their brain, and that's where they're going to say, I have too much pain, or I don't have enough pain. I have passion, motivation, fulfillment, joy, all of those kind of things.
And we just talked, we just sat out on the deck talking about a certain issue and how much of it is the reality of the circumstances, how much of it is the expectation of the circumstance.
That's right.
And we don't know. That's like the placebo effect. Did that pill, did the ingredients actually help me, or did my expectation that the ingredients would help me, help me?
Yes.
Both. Well, we don't know. Yeah.
I think you and I want to enhance that's what a habit is. I want to enhance not only my ability to remember to put my socks on in the morning, but I want to enhance my ability to remember to be kind to people and to say things to my wife the way she wants to actually hear them, not the way I want to say them in particular. And both of those, and we are a product of what we have been, and we are most likely going to do what we have done.
Yeah.
And now we're back into, okay, how do we create those nudges and habits? Yeah. Well, the same thing is true in we talked about the grooves in your mind on our one show about habits, and we talked about the impact of social context and social accountability, and now your gut expects you to eat kind of what you ate yesterday.
Yeah. And the way you ate.
And the way you ate.
And I do want to, it's a bit of a rabbit trail, but just because we just had lunch out on the deck. So before we did that, I habitually had lunch at my desk while I'm working. And when I'm working, I'm usually just a little, because I'm creating stuff. It's usually, I said anxiety, but I'm just kind of excited. You know, I'm kind of caffeinated in my work and I'm digging it. So I'm a little uppity. And so I'm eating that way, which is not optimal, you know, eating. I love the accountability. Gosh, this goes back to this is show 44. I think it was 43 was our one on social accountability. On you're my lunch accountability partner. Without you, I'll end up eating at my desk because I'm not self-disciplined enough to take the time and breathe deeply and calm down by myself. So you help me do that. We go out on the deck. We just did it. We sit down. We're looking at Pike's Peak, and you habitually you go. Yeah. And you're like, thank you, God. Thank you, God. And we just have that minute, and then we eat slowly. You eat a lot slower than you used to.
You have impacted me, Dad. Yeah, I try to set my bowl down.
I know. I see you. I say, you help me remember to keep doing that. So we sit there. We're accountable to each other for eating, taking that deep breath. Thank you, God, being grateful, eating slow, literally take a bite, put it down, just like I have to tell my kids sometimes, you know, put the fork down and actually taste the food. And we do that. Well, I don't even do breakfast. We're not doing breakfast. Yeah. So, but I do that. We do that with coffee and devotions. Yeah. It's kind of that meditative thing. And then at night at dinner, I do the same thing, man. We kind of have a funky system now that we don't put food on the table. We keep it. There's so many of us and whatever. We keep it in the kitchen, kind of a buffet style. So we meet in the kitchen, hold hands, and there's going to be, you know, 5-8 of us, whatever it is. Lord, thank you. Mm. I mean, I do a deep breath. Thank you for now. And it's just a quiet and a calm. And then we go sit down.
Can I speak into that?
Yeah. Because
just this last week, there was a patient and she had a flare up of her gastritis, reflux, and et cetera. And she's like, you know, she wanted off the medicines. I don't want to be on Tums and Zantac and Prilosec and those kind of things. And I would argue those are good medicines to get off of if you can. And I'm like, okay. I'm going to give you, you know, we're going to constrain it down in, but this is back to the gut and the gut brain connection. But we're going to put rules on you that you quote unquote must obey for the next, you know, 2-3 months. You've got to retrain your system here. But one of the requirements is that you must, and everybody in your family must, and you got to put yourself on the clock and it's 3 minutes. So a prayer time or a gratitude, 3 minutes is a long time. Hmm. If you've just sat down and now you're, okay, even that is a few seconds, but 3 minutes of gratitude, of gratefulness, of meditation, of mindfulness, and the reason that I think it's important, and I think we should all do that is brain-gut connection. Mm-hmm. Reflux, pain, gastritis is gut-brain connection. That's a signal of we're not right. Let me give you a little pain. We're going the wrong direction. And everybody thinks, oh, I have heartburn. I need to go take some medicine. And we're like, for everybody listening out there, please go to the website and figure out a way to not do that. That is your body. That's your, that's
the, it's like back to that thing. If I was with Kevin again, and I got a Band-Aid in my arm because he stabbed me again. He happens every time.
Darn it. Well, quit. Yeah, well, what am I going to, how am I going to get, quit doing this Band-Aid?
I got to buy more and better Band-Aids.
That's right. $1 million Band-Aids. So, but it's a perfect topic because it is kind of an example of bringing things together in that brain gut nodal way of something that everybody listening does two or three or, you know, if you're an average American, more than six times a day, and that's eat. But you're eating at your desk, you're eating at your car, you're grabbing a bite through as you walk through the kitchen, you're eating mindlessly. So to change that back, we say, look, you've got to have mindfulness, slow food where you promise me, I'm going to hold you accountable 3 minutes every meal.
Which now, and I'm thinking again, as, I mean, we just got to like hire Ben Hardy because I talk about, you know, the willpower doesn't work, setting it up because I'm thinking back to that. What?
He should be paying us. You mentioned him so many times.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah, you should call him.
I'll send this video to him. I actually sent him a video yesterday of Nakoda reading out of his book. I'll show that
that's
later.
That's good.
So because what I just talked about, you're my accountability partner. I now have a routine set up. It does that, what you just talked about, it does that for me. So I don't have to think about, I should take 3 minutes, I should whatever.
Set your watch.
By the proxy of going, hey man, you ready for lunch? Yeah, do you need a fork? Sure. And grab our food and then, you know, shuffle. And we finally sit down there. I came out today and you were already sitting there for a minute waiting for me. I sit down, take a deep breath. I mean, it's probably been that. Same thing that I just thinking about this now at home, we set up a routine. I didn't intentionally do it. It's just because we decided, it's easier to keep the food in the kitchen. We go in there, we pray. It takes way too long for me, for everybody to get their food. And I don't want to just go sit by myself. So I'm just hanging around. Hey guys, will you just put food on your plate and go down? But then I've also told, especially the youngest kids, look, if you get your food, whenever you sit, don't sit down and start eating by yourself. Wait till at least a few people are there. So they've just gotten into the rhythm of it's slow. And it just is. And thank goodness for that system, because it's not my self-discipline. It's not my will. I'm not sitting there wanting to eat and whatever. It just happens by that system. So just to that, what systems can we set up that do the good habit for us us having to assert our willpower and rely on that finite cup of willpower?
That's right.
And discipline.
Recognizing the blue zone idea as well, that the social accountability, the seasonal accountability, just don't eat foods out of season.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at you and me, I think, because we sit here and talk about all these healthy things we do that people might think, oh my gosh, I've had this told to me before. I wish I had your self-discipline. I wish I had your willpower. And as I talk about this, I'm thinking, I don't think I assert that much throughout the day now. My life is just kind of set up. I just follow along and respond to how my life has been set up, and I'm not exerting willpower.
Okay, you asked me the most important thing.
Except I did want a croissant this morning when we had coffee at Farmer's
Market. But your social accountability
No, it's literally, I would have gone.
Yeah. That's good. Back to that brain, and now I forgot what I was going to. Even talking about Kevin Hardy and willpower and energy, which even though people say energy, what they mean is mood and hormone, I'm going to argue for the most part. They don't mean kilojoules per muscle square inch of how much power can I exert on this, on the floor, right? That's you and I standing up right here is exerting energy, but we're not going, oh my gosh, this is so tiring. We don't think about it that way. When people say, I'm so tired, I'm so fatigued, I don't have enough energy to do something, they don't mean ATP. They don't mean the biochemical fire. What they mean is mind, attitude, and I think hormones are probably a big part of that. But what you just said, so we in our 10 years of friendship have done a lot of work in chipping and crafting and chipping and crafting and all of that.
Yeah.
To where right now you say that we at 50 whatever, no longer, I don't exert a lot of energy on saying, oh, I shouldn't go to McDonald's. Dad, gummit, I want to go to McDonald's. I just want to, it's right 100 yards away.
Yeah.
Zero thought, right? Now think of what does that translate into for you and me over the next 40 years as we become 60, 70, 80.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is Prolon. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a five-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their five-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin. Well, in what you just said, my thought was I am not exerting that energy to be disciplined, grit my teeth, have determination, perseverance, willpower, all that kind of stuff, because I'm not having to. And how much more do I have than left over in reserve?
Put somewhere else.
To write the book, to make the call, to have the hard talk with, I mean, that's some negative stuff, but to assert it towards something else. I have reserves.
That's right.
Keeping my reserves of it.
And that's where people are admitting to us they don't have the energy to have the hard conversation, to write the book.
Which I
go on the mountain bike ride.
And we've all been there, and we get there from time to time.
Sure. I mean, that's how we know that feeling. And I think everybody, like we were talking on the deck, there's a spectrum. So even if you're a high performer, high whatever, if you go down a little bit, you would still say, my energy or my mood or my intention or my passion or why, whatever, even though you might still be more productive than the next guy, who cares? It's all about you. And this is where now I would say to people, it isn't about what your insurance company pays for. Uh-huh. It's about what you want to invest in. That, and you should be thinking about investment in your brain gut connection.
Okay, so we're back to that. Because you went way deeper than I was going to go. Which, I mean, you are the doctor, so you're supposed to. I'm just the layman. But I was thinking, you know, is it sleep? Are you going to go to sleep? Is it okay? It's nutrition. Yeah, it's food. Is it exercise? Is it stress? I mean, those are just the easy four, whatever to say. And you didn't go to either of those.
I think so. You know the famous picture of the iceberg.
Yep.
And the big part under, and then you see the tip of the iceberg. I think what I would say is what you just mentioned, kind of our what we call the five pillars in those nutrition, exercise, my body, your input, output, recovery, are the like the 10 or 15 feet of the big iceberg right under the water. And for people to understand what's the iceberg, what you see is my libido is poor, my reflux, my headache, my tummy ache, my IBS, and on and on and on.
The
my
rash,
the manifestations, the symptoms that we have a $4 trillion healthcare system that is now chipping away at those kind of things. That's the Band-Aid on the arm from Kevin stabbing me.
That's a functional. I mean, I've seen that analogy a lot. They got the picture of the iceberg, a little bitty tip sticking out, this huge thing underneath. But how great is functional? This is unpolitically correct, but it's just true. For the traditional medicine, the 4-point whatever it is now, $1 trillion healthcare system is working on the little above water symptomatic stuff. And I could say functional medicine, integrated medicine, anybody who's dealing with root cause issues is down here with this big behemoth. And of course, all the money's up here.
Right.
It's another conversation.
Right.
Not down here in
right.
prevention and root cause.
And that's where I think I went with trying to go even, 10 or 15 yeah. feet under the waterline. Now you got the big stuff underneath there. And that's where I'd say in functional medicine, it gets complex, but then we would describe, what are the genetics and the, childhood experiences? What is the health of the gastrointestinal node? What is the health of your hormone? And that would mean information transfer through the body. How does your body communicate with itself from one cell to the next? How does it get rid of toxins? How does it, so all of those things are would then be the specialty of functional medicine, and trying to put that all together. That's the detective work that we often talk about. And of course, people, if they're used to just chipping away at the top, and then the first conversation we have is the first 10 feet, nutrition and exercise and sleep, and not to belittle those, but we're maximizing those, the complexity of sleep, the complexity of the normal fact that you have balance and you're not falling over, that is complex. And it's based on the fact that you slept last night, you drank some water, and all of these other things. But all of those, the sleep and the nutrition, all that is going through these nodes. And in fact, we kind of joke, if there's no such thing as being a functional medicalologist, right? But what I would call it is a gastro-neuro-psycho-immunologist, endocrinologist.
Slash. Parentheses, everything.
Everything,
is what you
right.
Say. Yeah, right. I still want to play with something. Okay, Lord of the Rings, we both love that. Last scenes, Frodo and Sam going up the mountain, no sleep, tons of stress, no food. I guess they were getting exercise, but they had no fuel for it. But just looking at that depletion, I was kind of coming into this with that, and I love the directions we've gone. But to say of those, because I was literally wondering, if you got to pick one.
Oh, for those guys?
If you're the Navy SEAL, if you're the out on the, okay. the Ma and Pa out on the prairie.
Okay. Then I would do the basics.
What?
Well, sleep. I mean, in the military. If you're military, and a campaign, or if you're on the front lines or something like that, it might be, the guys are attacking. It might be 2 hours. It might be 3 days that you are awake and vigilant and all that stuff. Or I think Hacksaw Ridge, and that guy was up on the mountain for more than a day or whatever. If he could have just gotten a nap. Wow, that just the value of a nap if you're 3 days without sleep.
Okay, so you are giving me an answer, which I didn't necessarily know if we'd get to, or maybe.
But what if you did get some sleep, but you're...
I know, but in that scenario of, especially if you're in a critical space, maybe that's another way to ask is, what can you best do without? And I would say you could do without exercise, you could do without food.
Okay. Water has to go high.
But sleep. How is it not almost number
sleep
one?
Sleep and water, you have about 3 days and you're dead.
Okay, water, I'm going to set that outside. you do have to, we just do. It's like breathing.
About 3 minutes.
Breathing's not ever on the list, unless you're Wim Hof, and then you got like 4 to 7 or something like that. But we should have him on the show. By the way,
I would be very curious.
Very curious. But looking at that, what's the relevance here? If somebody's out there in a super critical space and they're listening to this thinking, okay, I need to stop stressing, or I need to quit eating Cheetos and I need to eat this, or I need to I haven't exercised for a while. Would you say the best thing might be sleep?
Yes, sure.
And we're not. This isn't a black and white definitive thing.
Right.
It's a broad brush.
It is,
because you have me now all of a sudden thinking about, why don't I pay attention more to when I am in any lack? My best go to might be not go out and kill myself exercising.
Right. Go get 9 or 10 hours of sleep that night.
Not eat a salad. Not even fast. It's sleep. Go sleep. Well, maybe fast so I get better sleep.
Well, so I think. You asking the question this way isn't going to get us to an answer of what's the best thing. But I think what it's highlighting is that
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
Sometimes there is the one thing for sure. If you haven't drank water for 2 days, that'll be number one. If you haven't slept for 2 days, that'll be number one. But I think what you're asking is, what about the average person who's got a struggle with XYZ and they just want to kind of do one thing? And I would say, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's why I premise this. You're not going to like this. It's not fair. I'm saying, what's the thing that you throw in the pool of life? The lifesaver.
What's a buoy? Life buoy.
A most prominent?
Right. We're going to catch most people with this life buoy. Most tops it out.
Yes.
There.
Thank you. Most prominent lifesaver. If we have to go out there into the wreck of American health right now
help me, and they're drowning.
And they're what's one of the am I going to throw them a salad? Am I going to throw them a treadmill?
A glass of water.
Yeah.
Or are we going to throw them some sleep? And I think sleep, and by that we mean high quality, not sleep apnea, snoring, low pulse oximetry at night, but restorative, restful sleep.
As we went through the four pillars, we talked about sleep. I don't know that we talked about sleep problems.
We did talk about, you know, if you're not getting full restoration, we should probably do a show on that because my gosh, it's very deep and very complex. And I love Matthew Walker who wrote the book, Why We Sleep, that has TED Talks and stuff. And he has a great perspective. Here's what I think would happen to, as we're tossing those things out, half of those people would say, yeah, great. I can't sleep.
Well, that's why there's a show on sleep. But if we I'm right. That's the third show topic we've come up with. We need to go into is sleep. But I'm just saying, if we look at that, and if you had to say, it's kind of that thing I used to talk about this when I was consulting, you know, speakers and authors trying to get to there. What's their main thing? Look, if you got 10,000 people out there and you got 60 seconds to address, and they all have a similar pathology need or whatever, and you got to throw out a lifesaver, what is it? And if you go out there, and are you going to go, folks, everybody eat a salad? Or everybody fast, which you might, that's going to be top of the list, a topper of the list for you. But I don't see you going, everybody, man, I think for the most part, if you guys are all ailing from the same thing, you need to go run or exercise. Mm-mm. Sleep. Mm-hmm. It's got to be one of the most.
Sure is an attractive answer.
Because
in the medical world, a lot of people on the podcast that I listen to, all right, you have 2 minutes to answer this question. You're the czar of the world.
Yeah.
What to do with his health policy? What are you going to ask him to do? If you could, you're the czar of health policy in America.
I'll give you my answer right there. And it's regard to the school system.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say too. Stop 7:30 a.m. at school.
Yeah. I've got three kids, 12, 10, and 8. School starts at 7:45, I think, or they have to be there. And so we come and they don't get out till, you know, X time. And then if there's homework or for us, we don't mess with that as much as we do extracurricular stuff. I want them to be investing in dance and things like that. And then family time's a premium as well. But then it's like, oh my gosh, you got to go to bed. Cause if you're going to get, I mean, those kids need a truckload. Right. My 8-year-old gets 12 hours of sleep.
Right. Yeah.
She has for 4 years.
Yeah.
12 hours of sleep. That's just.
And see, it's even harder on the teenagers cause they probably need, you know, 10, 9.
I'm always looking at the yawning barometer. Like my 12-year-old, I don't know what, honest to God, Randy, and everybody listen, I don't know what her yawn looks like. We've been such sleep Nazis. I do not know what her yawn looks like.
I never thought. I've never seen my kids yawn.
My Dakota, he's 10. Man, I never are tired. They're always wanting to stay up. Serene. Now my That's boys.
So interesting.
My boys, 15 and, what are they? 14 and 15. They're the ones. I got on one the other night. It was like 1 o'clock and I got up to pee and he's like, dude, what are you doing? Well, I don't have to get up that early. Okay, let's do the math. And he knows this.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, you're right. You're right, daddy. I got to do that. So I don't mind you stay up, but then you've got to sleep that late. And if you can't, but then where I got him is that, but the point is, if you're complaining about your performance, your attitude, I just want us both to address. Here's why.
Here's the root cause of that great big iceberg.
Yeah.
And you're complaining about, I'm tired in school. I didn't get a good grade, or I can't run as fast as I want to.
But how late did you choose to stay? So he accepted that.
Yeah.
And that's good accountability. I wasn't a jerk about it. I said, man, gosh, but we got to point that. Well, so no, if you're doing that.
He's also pretty wise for his age. Because there's also.
He is, but he's still as driven to stay up late at night goofing off as any other kid. Mm. I don't know what that is.
Right. The goof off. Well, the goof off factor, but. You know who's the worst offender is the high-performing teenager. The one
that's with, true. He's going to stay up and get beyond valedictorian. Yes, and they're going to get a 4.0 and stay up till 2.
Because they're already type A. They're already anxious. They're already doing that brain-gut connection. I see way more pathology in them. Now, the pathology for the goof-off lazy one might be he got a C instead of a B. But the pathology over here in a high-performing teenager who's also on student council and sports and goes early for band practice and all of that, that's a lot of, and it's usually self-inflicted. They've been taught that, and this is, you know, the type A high-performing kind of people, a lot of whom might be in the audience of, oh yeah, or their kids are not doing that.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the balance. There's the, you know, the one who needs to be motivated and why don't you want to get good grades and all of that. But be careful with the one that's high-performing and coach and teach them because they will. Then this is not uncommon. In fact, I would say for when, you know, we don't get teenagers in here, but when we do, I'd say it's more that kind. That's one of the driving issues. And sleep.
And how many have you seen where they have the breakdown, man? They're in college and in their 20 and they have a breakdown.
Well, but they don't call it. They call it depression. They call it anxiety. Well, they call it,
right.
You know, irritability. They call it my period's bad this week. They call it so much. Nobody calls it a breakdown.
Well, and what bothers me now is what you and I talk about is, which I'm still, I know we both struggle with the accuracy of telomeres. Mm-hmm. So layman's terms, telomeres is the
end cap on your chromosomes.
So it's a health measurement. Just like you can go in, we both had our carotid
artery. Thickness. Yeah, yeah. Carotid artery thickness.
Then go in there and say, okay, Randy, you may be 50, but according to your carotid artery, you got the health of a 30-year-old or a 70-year-old. You right. know, so it's a real health measurement. That's what a telomere is. And one of the worst, according to them, issues or harmful issues is your ACE score, adverse childhood effects.
Events. Uh-huh.
So we're way back here in childhood, and I'm thinking, man, these kids, yeah, that aren't getting sleep, how is that adding up to who they're going to be? Now we're into our show that we just did with Bredesen on early onset
dementia
and mm-hmm. Alzheimer's and whatever. That's what we're dealing with our kids right now. This isn't a kid's sleep show, but that's what we're
No, but think about it over here as you're the big, big part of your iceberg underneath the waterline. And for anybody who has had in their history, in their childhood, write that down too. We could do a show on that.
Ace, I did. I already got it.
Okay. And that goes from what we just said. You're the overworked, overstressed, whatever kind of kid. Maybe your parents don't even pressure you, but you create your own anxiety about high performance. Or, and the worst is, you know, sexual abuse, you know, over time. Like that.
I do want to do a show on that ACE scores, but how to. Can you overcome them?
Sure.
Okay. We'll come back.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. And back to our big iceberg underneath the waterline. This is really digging into the roots, and it impacts the way your telomeres are functioning. So genetically, when you talk about epigenetics and everything you eat and think and breathe and all the stuff that we've been talking about that leads to a placebo effect and habit and all that is the story or the context or the soup of your life that you're swimming in. And certainly the early childhood events. And here's the unique thing about humans. Let's just say that one individual person out there got a B in as a junior and they feel like it ruined their chances for Harvard, to them that is PTSD, right? You or I would not, it's like, hey, it's not a C in high school, right? And that's, so it's perception.
I just did a show with Sean Askenozzi of our chocolate. We love Askenozzi chocolate. And his life was, anybody having a parent die would be bad. His life was destroyed, in essence, at age 14 when his dad died, because his dad was everything to him. And it wasn't until way later in life, I'm realizing he's never gotten past it. He felt like God abandoned him, so he abandoned God. And I mean, this whole thing from that. I mean, again, his perception was so different from, you know, another kid, any kid's going to be bad, but it depends on the relationship, the perspective, 100 things, as you know, that derailed him for most of his life.
And when you say, can he heal? And he did.
He has.
Right? But it's not a guarantee. And for one person to heal is, you know, one counseling session. And for another person, it's a decade of hard, hard, hard work.
Yeah, that's what you would say, is decades.
Well, on the extremes, I've got, you know, think of the worst possible time in America, let's call it the Holocaust. And you've got many, many people embittered, broken, they abandoned God, and then you've got Elie Wiesel, and you've got Corrie ten Boom, The Hiding Place, her story over here of how does that happen, where one person's perspective can go this way and that way, and that's the power of your own mindset and your own choice. We're back to the habits, how you choose to see things. And so the student who sees a B as devastating rather than as a learning or whatever kind of thing is actually, if I'm Harvard, I'm like, that you are brittle. You are not bendable.
And resilient. Yeah. Huh? Resilient.
Oh, I thought you said, I couldn't see, I thought you said Brazilian.
I'm making up words.
Well, no, I didn't think, people from Brazil, what is that?
It has to do with strategery. Resilient.
Resilience, yes, the bendability and that kind of thing, which ultimately I think then you've got a whole huge iceberg under the water and barely anything floating on top.
Yeah.
Versus you've got, you know, issues underwater and a whole lot of problems up on top of.
Man, I'm so sitting here just thinking, I'm enamored with what we came to with sleep being a, again, it's not the pillar, the end all. It's not the prescription for everybody. And we're not going to weigh that. That's it. Sleep. I mean, our next book is Sleep or Die. Be appropriate.
Sleep or linger. You will linger in your pathology. But we can't say this, and I think you were going there, that if, you know, you're stuck on a desert island and you only have one tool in your tool bag and you're going to try to make yourself as best as you can be, sleep is going to figure prominently up there in that. And I'm convicted.
Well, and I think, I do think about it. Like next week, man, I've got a big week, you know, publisher meetings and all this. I want to be top notch. So I'm going to watch prior to that, what I eat and how I sleep. Obviously, you know, stress as well, but I'm often thinking about what wrecks my sleep most, I think, is my food, you know, stress or whatever is second. Be a good time to just skip dinner. Mm-hmm. Sleep well, eat well during the day, or if I'm going to skip dinner, sleep well, be filled up, have my, be filled up from a sleep standpoint for my brain.
For your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd probably do me better than going out and exercising like I normally do.
Well, but let's put a little bit of pressure on you, because we could argue that you would have been even better on that day if you had a year behind you.
Well, yes.
Of averaging 8 hours of sleep.
I do.
There you go.
I do, actually.
You're in the minority.
Well, but it's only been the last year.
I was going to say, you've also changed.
I have changed.
And me too.
I've altered my life.
So I think for both of us, and for me and my, you know, did we do a show on telomeres? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
Well, me and my, you know, confusingly short.
Well, that's telomeres. Why I think that's why we didn't do it. We're so frustrated
with the assessment of it.
Yeah.
I am. We should have asked Dr. Bredesen about that one.
We should have.
So, but one of the things that I did change in order to try was, you know, I grew up in the performance anxiety world starting from high school on up. and then the medical world, the military world, and all of that. So until 45, 6 hours average, you know, probably. And I think a lot of people.
That's why I worry in regards to sleep to telomeres, is because I don't know what else to point to for you.
You don't
have any other adverse child experience.
Right. Maybe from 5 to 20. 5 to 20 was daily fast food.
True.
You know, just out of ignorance. And you too, kind of.
I don't think I did as much as you do, it sounds like. But I, you know, did a decent amount,
but one of the things is sleep. How much chopping at my roots did I do during those 40 years?
So less sleep and bad quality sleep because you're living on McDonald's.
On McDonald's.
Yeah.
Right. So even though I look back and said, oh, I could sleep normally, but I know I was mouth breathing. I know I was doing other things. And how much did that siphon away of my longevity? And can I get that back? And I would say to an extent, yes. And to an extent, no.
Well, you can always be weller. Do what you can to maintain you're at and not decline.
To maintain, not decline, and to be becoming as well as possible.
Yeah, but taking this, and I'm thinking about just for the economy of my life and my family's life. I mean, we do put, you know, we put a high priority on sleep, and I think are pretty prone to, when my wife and I are off or, you know, whatever, to go, gosh, you know, go to sleep. But it hasn't been as, not concrete, but as tangible as what I feel like I'm going to have from this show on. Of going, guys, wherever we're suffering, it may be our best bet. Now, we got to audit it and see what's happening. It's not going to hurt. We could say
it
that.
Won't
There's
hurt.
No. There are times when I think my exercise hurts me. I do it when I'm not recovered, and I may be doing it to deal with stress or my own demons or performance or whatever, and it's really not best for me. There's probably times when I eat. There's definitely times when I eat, and it's not best for me. But you could have times. I mean, you could get to the point of, if you fast long enough, you're going to disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do that to excess. If you're sleeping quality now, because again, I was going to say right there, you have so many patients come and go, I'm sleeping 14 hours a day and I'm exhausted, but they're not sleeping
right.
Well,
That's what I was going to. So a patient this week that, you know, also had this, if I sleep 6 to 7, it seems okay. But if I sleep longer than that, then it turns into one of those days that I sleep 14 and I stay in bed all day long and I'm depressed and that kind of thing. So,
that's pathology.
That's pathology. That's right. That's brokenness. It's not, oh, you know, God blessed you with 14 hours of sleep and now you're recovered. That's wrong, bad sleep. And
14 hours of sleep is after you haven't slept for 3 days because you were, you know.
Right. And even then, and Dr. Walker does say, you know, sleep lost is sleep lost. You don't regain.
Yeah.
And that's also convicting. It's like, you don't, there's no catching up on the weekends. There's no, you know, so that goes back into the habits that, and you and I have both really strongly convicted ourselves and our families to, you know, turn the screens off. We begin bedtime.
Yeah. Let's just do one on sleep. There's more and more. But it's like you talking about, we talk about things like that book wouldn't sell. No, I don't want to sleep. It's not fun to me. No, it's like meditation. I don't want to sleep. I don't want to meditate.
I'd rather go do something. I have to work.
The hard work of relaxation, which you talk about. Mm-hmm. So it's not popular, but what's popular is, okay, if you want to do X, what's the performance over here that you want? What's the peace you want? What's the fulfillment that you want? And if that's dependent on here, then hopefully we can get motivated to sleep, do the things that help us sleep better. Okay. It's good. Should we follow up with, maybe we should just follow up with that. Sleep's next.
Sleep can be next. Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
That was good.
So there you go. Your most protected health habit is sleep. If you eat like crap, you don't exercise, you stay stressed and basically fall off your health wagon, at the least do what you can to get some decent sleep. Recover. This discovery, again, has affected my evening routines and comprehension of my overall health and wellness. It's a great piece of wisdom to tell others, to share with them, especially those who feel they're doing so many of the right things for their health, but they are still struggling and not getting the wellness results they desire. Hey, thank you for tuning in to this self-helpful podcast where I strive to help you and me elevate our personal experience of life and the way we show up for others. Stay driven, my friends.